when I say deep democracy, we're not talking about representational democracy. We're not talking about, you know, having to 1,000 people needing to reach one person in order for a single thing to maybe kind of sort of change eventually. I'm talking about a democratic modality where the resources and the things that affect the life of a community, they have direct control over.
Hello and welcome back to the final installment of Building Local Power Detroit, our first stop in a multi-city series where we explore how to build local power from the experiences of people who are doing just that on the ground in their respective cities. I'm here as always with my co-host, Luke Gannon, and as all of you know by now, Luke is the real star of the show. I'm just the supporting talent, but Luke, I gotta say, after spending the last couple of months getting to talk to these community leaders, advocates, activists, and social entrepreneurs, all who have these really powerful stories about the drive to write Detroit's next chapter, I feel bonded to Detroit in a way, and it actually, like, really makes me a little emotional. I'm kind of sad to leave.
How do I say goodbye to
Reggie? Yup. I'm playing it for you.
Luke, you are the best. But you know, seriously, I know you're probably tired of hearing me talk about my hometown, Modesto. We built this whole glorious Modesto campaign around. But talking to all of these like really passionate, dedicated, smart folks in Detroit, it really gives me all of those glorious vibes.
Oh, yes, truly. I am with you, Reggie. I am seriously, a little sad to leave, but before we do, we have a fabulous final Detroit episode lined up for you. Today on the show, we are joined by two phenomenal people from the Detroit Community Wealth Fund, co-founder and senior fellow Margot Dalal and Rosie DeSantis, the director of community programming. The Detroit Community Wealth Fund fosters, educates, and finances democratic and cooperative businesses by providing technical assistance, trainings, and implementing resource networks to put power in the hands of the workers and communities.
That's great, Luke. And you know, we think these stories will, as always, be illuminating in their own right, but I hope that they also inspire you on your journey to build local power wherever you're listening from.
Let's dive in. Here's Margot.
I live in Detroit and I've lived here for just over 10 years now. And I moved to Detroit from Massachusetts, where I was in school. And I was really interested in entrepreneurship and worker ownership and what was happening in Detroit in 2013 when the city filed for bankruptcy. So I ended up moving here while I was in school and then staying. I grew up in Northern Virginia and went to high school in DC and love that part of the country. My dad is an immigrant from India and he started a business. I was in maybe sixth grade when he started his business. My uncle started a business and they've always been quite entrepreneurial and kind of financially focused. And then my mom is kind of like a Renaissance woman and she can do just about anything and then will start a business doing that. So whether it's sewing or baking or crafting of any kind, she has a pretty successful ceramics business now. So just that was a huge part of my childhood of like playing business and seeing my parents do that. I also grew up in a part of Virginia that had a lot of small businesses. I was lucky to see that. And my friends' parents own small businesses. So that's always been part of my life. And when I was in school and you get awakened to the problems of capitalism and also alternatives like worker-owned businesses, those things, I think, resonated with me a lot. I have lots of other interests, of course, but to me, it made a lot of sense to think about alternative forms of financing that included community in the decision-making process and then ultimately serves community-owned businesses.
While Margot eventually found her way to Detroit and called it home, Rosie was born and raised there. Here's Rosie.
I was born and raised on the East Side. I've been here my whole life except for college. Essentially, the East Side, in contrast to the West Side, particular area where I'm from, like, there's just like these swaths and swaths of vacant land. At times, you know, it felt like, you know, you walk down a certain block and it feels like you're growing up in the countryside. On the other hand, like, there's like, it's just normal to have like an entire block of like burnt down bungalows. And I don't like painting that picture because the way that it, you know, feeds into like ruin porn or whatever. It was facts, you know? And so that, that's really what it looks like. But what folks are very good at in Detroit is making things by and for themselves with right. whatever tools that they have, and making it special and making it, you know, meaningful to them and their neighbors. So I think very early on, what I witnessed in terms of like that reclamation of agency is like squatting on land and just creating these little like corners of the world that really mean something to people. These little, you know, almost like handmade parks or like little movie screening places or like assembled gyms outside, using their houses as like a little community centers. And, you know, block clubs, we're very good at, folks in Detroit love a block club more than anywhere I've ever seen. And so I witnessed a lot growing up of like people finding ways to prioritize their own vision for their neighborhood, whether or not they were given the power to actually enact it, but they used the tools that they had to enact that with the space that they were surrounded by. The land that we were surrounded by provided like a particular opportunity for that. I was raised around a lot of like community planning, community visioning happenings, processes. And my mom founded a nonprofit, and what she kind of like hammered into me with the way that she wanted this thing to move was, you know, a very simple idea that people deserve to be and are the experts of their own experience and deserve to have control over the resources and the situations that affect their neighborhoods and their lives and communities, which unfortunately is like kind of a radical idea. And so I was really raised like seeing how these community planning processes facilitated like this kind of agency that I got really obsessed with as I became an adult. And also like having had some experiences of like witnessing that agency being ignored or limited, and also seeing how Detroiters are able to take it back in certain ways or build it for themselves has always really inspired me. Yeah, that's kind of been like really the theme of my life and my organizing and what brought me into the Wealth Fund.
In 2016, Margot met the three other co-founders of what would become the Detroit Community Wealth Fund. At the same time, there was an emerging network of organizations that formed the Seed Commons, which, as Margot details, is now a national organization that finances cooperatives all over the U.S.
Detroit Community Wealth Fund was started to become a member of the Seed Commons and do the type of place-based lending and cooperative development that all organizations of the Seed Commons do. So we started to do that type of lending and work in Detroit, and Since 2016, we've grown our organization. It was a really perfect fit for me. I was interested in doing work with businesses, but not in the typical kind of capitalist way. And I saw that having actual real consequences for Detroit, right? And so thinking about how we can do economics differently in a way that's actually serving Detroiters and is built by Detroiters who are primarily Black and primarily low income, that felt important to me. So it was really a gift to be able to do the work of the Detroit Community Wealth Fund, and now to kind of see where that's gone and share it with others is really exciting.
Detroit has always epitomized the spirit of people power. Detroiters recognize that they must create solutions for the people and by the people.
There's a culture of getting things done in Detroit by Detroiters for a long time, and that has often been because there weren't services, there weren't resources that were available, right? And so there is this culture of cooperation, of working together, of meeting the need. 2013, when the city filed for bankruptcy, that was that prior and after that, there was a long period of assessing how that was going to play out in the city. Since 2013, there's so much that has changed. And some that hasn't changed, right? I think it really became obvious what parts of the city were going to be benefiting from further investment and from attention, what parts were not, right? There were entire city plans that decided on which neighborhoods were going to exist and which might not exist. I guarantee you that was not necessarily a conversation that included those residents. And so I think for something like the Detroit Community Wealth Fund, and again, what the Wealth Fund is doing, the role that this organization is playing is, I say it's helping to add economic value to the skills that Detroiters already have, right? Detroiters already have skills. They already have resources, but how can we add economic value to those? And that means, how can we create living wages? How can we create profit that the community owns? And then how can we do it in a way that is not extractive? Which, if you know anything about Detroit in the last 10 years, you know that there has been 1 out of 4 homes has been foreclosed on in tax foreclosure. This was illegal. This was an illegal thing that should never have happened. And why did that happen, right? Because there was a financial system that benefited from it in many different ways. And so we can't use that same financial system to build back businesses, especially businesses that we want to be owned and controlled by the community, who would have never let this happen in the first place. And so those are, I think, the two roles that DCWF is playing. How can we do financing in an ethical and non-extractive way that doesn't ever leave community worse off? And also, how can we build back businesses that are owned by the community and have the community's interests first and foremost? How are we building businesses that are rooted in specific neighborhoods and communities in Detroit?
The Detroit Community Wealth Fund provides non-extractive capital to finance worker cooperatives. Banks provide loans with the condition of minimizing their risk, essentially meaning that one needs existing wealth to acquire more.
So if you wanted to start a business, you would go to the bank, you would, you know, say, I want $100,000. And they'd say, okay, cool. What is the collateral? What are you putting up that if we can't get our $100,000 back, what are you going to give us? And that means that you have to have some kind of asset to begin with. You might need to have a home. It's often property. You might need to have cash in your bank account. That's the first thing that you have to do, right? If you fail, or even before you fail, if you're not making money in the first few months, or maybe the first year, you still owe on that loan. You have to pay every month, regardless of if you're making money, regardless of if you can feed yourself. If you fail, now whatever you owe, the bank is going to come and take assets from you in order to make good on the loan that they gave you. That's extractive, right? We've seen that play out in all sorts of ways. That's damaging, right? And there's a whole bunch of complicated ways that has been played out. You know, another way that capital is extractive is if you can't get a loan from your bank, you might go and take out a few credit cards that allow you to, you know, rack up tens of thousands of dollars of debt. And if you're not paying every month, you're probably paying 15, 20, 25%, sometimes even 50% or more on your interest. Same thing with a payday loan, right? You cannot afford something, yeah. You need a payday advance. You are sometimes paying 100% or more of that amount of money just to get it for a week or a few days. That is how capital maintains itself. And that's how, you know, normal people are totally exploited for essentially not having resources. We all know that is incredibly problematic on so many levels. And this gets even more complicated when you think about the housing crisis and all these other larger systems, right? Non-extractive capital is kind of doing, and Seed Commons coined this, it is fortunately increasing in popularity. And I think there are different ways that you might be able to do this, but the way that the Seed Commons and the way that the Detroit Community Wealth Fund does it is there's a few things that contribute towards non-extractive. One is that we're not taking collateral. So immediately our capital is accessible to people that don't have historical wealth. The second is that we only require repayment when profit is made after living wages are made. So it's sustainable. You don't owe money the first month. You might not owe money the first year unless you're breaking even. You require the repayment is a percentage of profit. So that means the business needs to be doing well and needs to be sustainable before we as the lender are even successful ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then the third part is that we understand that it is really hard to run businesses, and that requires a tremendous amount of technical assistance. It's impossible for one person or even a group of people to run a business on their own. So we provide ongoing assistance for the businesses that we work with, if pivots are necessary, if changes to the business plan are necessary, if there are interpersonal issues, right? This is a really hard thing to do. And we provide free ongoing technical assistance until a loan is repaid. So those are the three, I think, big things. If a loan fails, no one is personally responsible for that loan. If a business closes, you know, and that happens, that does happen. We're not ever going after assets that aren't secured as part of the loan that we have provided.
Rosie facilitates the Cooperative Economic Network of Detroit, which is a platform for co-ops to come together and share resources and create community and economic partnerships.
It's just a platform for them to support one another, as well as build up these solid, tangible partnerships towards the creation of like a larger cooperative ecosystem. There's also one of the main aspects of this program is they pay member dues, and those dues go into a large fund that we have that's also supported by outside funding. But these dues go into that fund, and folks can ask to withdraw from that pooled money for anything that they need, up to $800 twice a year. And essentially, like, it's all democratic. So any withdrawal that's requested has to be voted on by the rest of the membership. We call it the Member Solidarity Fund. And yeah, there are a lot of different sort of aspects of this program, but essentially it was created to try to build up a more an insular cooperative economy that right now is less the focus, so much as like the relationships that need to be built between these folks, between the membership, in order to do this sort of like deep work, this deep organizing. So it's right now, particularly in this phase of it, we're really focused on getting them to connect with one another and fleshing out what types of partnerships, how can they meet each other's needs in a solid way, who's sourcing what from who, who's taking on what project with who for what, you know. There are 11 members right now. And a lot of these folks come to us, a lot of folks become members in order to get support with their transition into becoming a co-op. We also don't just accept co-ops. We accept basically requirement for membership is that there's some sort of pooling of resources, sharing of resources within your organization, and you run democratically. Or if you need support with your democratic processes and structure, that's why you're getting into the network. And so there are a lot of smaller projects that aren't so much like businesses, but are more focused on building out democracy within their respective community, some piece of like sharing of resources, which might be as small as like a tool library. We offer workshops that are exclusive to our membership.
While Rosie has built the Cooperative Economic Network, they have faced one big challenge.
The biggest thing is just folks' capacity. Asking folks to get together to do anything is a challenge when these folks are really dealing with limited resources in many ways. And so it's like we're trying to support them connecting, and then our capacity, because I run this program by myself, we're trying to both facilitate these connections while also offering this ongoing technical assistance towards their transition, while also doing these workshops. So it's just a lot, you know, but I would say that, and, you know, because we're stressing like the relationship building so much, almost all of our events and stuff are in person, and that's deliberate. And that's a challenge. And otherwise, it's really just supporting people through the earliest phases of them building out their governance and democratic processes, and making sure that they, you know, they stay on track with like a work plan for that. Because it's like, if you're not committed to that, then membership might not make sense to you, you know? So we're really trying to think through, like, what is it going to take to get folks aware of what's being built right now? One thing that we're doing is free neighborhood workshops, essentially like food and childcare provided. And we're going to talk to you about what a co-op is at the most essential level, and what is our vision for what a locally self-reliant cooperative economy looks like. In terms of the members' response, the biggest thing that like I perceive is they're just very excited to be with each other. Just very excited about the connections that they are building. And I feel like it's many times rarer than we think, just people coming together based on shared values, like explicitly, that is what we're here. That is why we're here, like fundamentally support each other because of that.
Rosie has had multiple highlights throughout their experience working with cooperatives.
The first one was when we did a version of our incubator program, where essentially a local nonprofit approached us after surveying their neighbors about what businesses they wanted to see. And a co-op was created out of that, based on that, from folks involved in that area or living in that area. Challenges with that co-op, and they're still developing, but just to know that like this model is possible gave me just like a lot of hope in terms of just like how our programming and this model can be used to facilitate deep democracy and, you know, prioritizing the visions of Detroiters for themselves. So when I say deep democracy, we're not talking about representational democracy. We're not talking about, you know, having to 1,000 people needing to reach one person in order for a single thing to maybe kind of sort of change eventually. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a democratic modality or whatever, where the resources and the things that affect the life of a community, they have direct control over. Are there situations where you might send a delegate and there might be different committees, and you know, these folks don't, that's not their decision-making realm, but are those delegates revocable? They be switched out at the behest of the community or their specific committee within that community? Folks like having direct control over the things that affect their lives. This democracy that is rooted in relationships, that is rooted in the spirit of like, we're here to meet each other's needs. We're here to make sure that everyone's okay. The other moment was, I mean, every time that like the network gets together and folks, I see just folks talking and they're just like so into being with one another. And there's just that like spirit, like I'm glad to be with these people.
A community should have autonomy over issues that affect them. Instead of relying solely on transactional and representative democracy, we should prioritize systems built on relationships, community decision-making, and community control. As Margot explains, there are challenges living within a globalized economy.
I am a big proponent of thinking about Detroit as not separate from the rest of the state, the rest of Metro Detroit, the rest of the country. And I think that's important because I do think that we're in a globalized economy, right? We do need to be thinking at that scale. There are pros and cons to that. I'm not saying that Detroit, you know, should be selling everything across the Atlantic, but I think that what a local economy that is self-sufficient is one that is exactly that, is able to support the people of Detroit. And by that, I mean living wages. By that, I mean clean air, you know, access to clean water, access to education that works. I also think that that means that we do have to be thoughtful about how Detroit is engaging with outside of the city. I guess I'm just saying it's not, I don't imagine it's fully insulated. So I know that means more public services and programs in Detroit, more investment into Detroit neighborhoods. And that's not controlled necessarily by the city or by our huge billionaires that control so much of the development in Detroit that, you know, tack on community benefits agreements that mean virtually nothing. I think that, to me, that is so critical. Like, I don't think we would be as angry of a new development happening if we had affordable housing, or if we, I don't think we would be as angry with, because there is a lot of land here, right? And I think that that's something we also need to reconcile with. It's like, we have a surplus of vacant land. Does that mean we need to develop every square inch of it? No, but like, what are we doing and how are we doing it and who is included, I think is critical.
When we asked Rosie how they think about a locally self-reliant Detroit, they added this.
It really is these circular hyper-local production within neighborhoods or, you know, districts within let's say a municipality that can start at the neighborhood level. You know, what if a neighborhood had damn near every resource that they needed to survive and thrive, and that those were owned and democratically controlled by those folks in that area? Then, you know, you expand that out to, okay, how do we communicate and what are we getting from and contributing to these other hyper-local economies? What decisions need to be at a larger municipal level? What decisions are reserved for just the neighborhood? I've been screaming it all around the city. Hyper-local, circular production, circular community-controlled, democratic production. I think that Detroit, more than maybe anywhere in the country, is just like so good at building out these little hubs, these little sites of community decision making. And so there's just so much potential here for building out this sort of web of local power. But it's about the intentionality behind it and also turning it into an ecosystem.
Thank you so much, Rosie and Margot, for those incredible insights and for sharing your work and passion with us on the show today. Before we leave, here are Rosie's book recommendations.
First one is the Jackson Kush Plume. You know, like those folks will admit themselves, like what they have and have not accomplished, like that the Jackson Kush plan is a plan. I think people mistake it for, oh, this is what we've already done and this is all of what we're doing. It's not, it is a blueprint. But I would definitely say that. And then there's a paper that a friend of mine, as well as a number of other amazing folks, including his wife, wrote, Masonhurst and Horde, called Community, Democracy, and Mutual Aid Towards Dual Power and Beyond. That one really shaped a lot of my thinking.
Head to your local bookstore or library and check out these books. Thank you so much again, Margot and Rosie, for rounding out a wonderful season on Detroit. Over to you, Reggie.
Luke, great job as always. Thank you for bringing us the story. And Margot and Rosie, thank you both for your work and for sharing your passion for Detroit and seeing it live in its full glory. And thanks to all of you, our listeners, for tuning in. We hope that over the last several weeks, you too have developed a bit of a kinship with Detroit and were able to see your own work and aspirations for your community embedded in these stories. And we're not saying goodbye to Detroit, it's just see you later. We're also not saying goodbye to these really inspiring stories of building local power. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with our first episode from the 51st state, DC. Yes, I am speaking that into existence. But in the meantime, check out the show notes from today's episode to dive deeper into what we discussed today. And as always, you can visit ilsr.org for more on our work to fight corporate control and build local power. And you can always send us an email to buildinglocalpower@ilsr.org to let us know what's on your mind. This show is produced by Luke Gannon and me, Reggie Rucker. The podcast is edited by Luke Gannon and Taya Noel. The music for the season is also composed by Taya Noel. Thank you so much for listening to Building Local Power.